All right, family, we got Troy Bell hanging out with us, City of Muskegon Heights City Manager. Fresh back, Rob, on that private jet from the inauguration ceremony.
Fresh back.
Private jet. Well, I don't know who you flew down there with, man. What was that like?
wasn't a private jet, I wish. It was, unless Southwest went private and I didn't hear about it.
Oh, okay. All right. So how did you manage to be one of the 1,000 people that got this, you know, got to get inside and be on the mall for this?
Well, it started with my daughter. She was real excited about the election and participated in the process. And she asked if the election turned out the way that she wanted it to turn out, whether or not we could go to the inauguration. And so it gave me an opportunity to reach back to some of the folks that I grew up with in the Washington, D.C. area. I had the benefit and the fortune to serve as a page in the House. And the media coverage of the last few weeks was particularly personal for me.
Oh, wow. So how long did you work there?
I was a page for 2 years back when they had pages.
Right. Mm-hmm. So when you saw this stuff a couple of weeks ago, how did it make you feel, man?
It was crazy because the amount of ritual that was involved in even as a page to be able to go out on the floor and the way that we had to conduct ourselves when we were out on the floor was very specific. It was controlled, and to see folks who evidently had no regard for the sacred nature of the things that are done there in the name of democracy to enter that chamber with complete disregard for the process and the people and the impact that it has on our democracy, our republic. It was heart-wrenching. It was.
Okay.
The benefit of being able to, as a kid growing up, to sing Christmas carols for Jimmy Carter and his family, and had met several of the presidents via tours of the White House. And my father actually served as the commander of the D.C. Army National Guard.
What? And so
folks that were out there were, you know, troops that he previously commanded.
Wow. Now, what was your father's rank? And I know he's been a trendsetter, too, in Florida and throughout the country.
Absolutely. He retired as a 1-star brigadier general.
Look at that, Rob.
Wow.
To be a general, that's tough, bro. He just don't make anybody a general.
No, and, you know, in the era that he came up, he's one of the few in the beginning that reached that rank coming out of an ROTC program. You know, he graduated from Florida A&M and their ROTC program. Previous to that, the only pathway that there was, or the main pathway to a general officer, was through the academy, West Point. And so for him to achieve that, and the others that came along with him to achieve that rank in that era when there were still segregated housing, you know, I remember stories about when he was stationed in Oklahoma. They had housing for white officers, but they didn't have housing for black officers. So they put black officers in the trailer park.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Crazy, wow. Man.
It was.
Wow. And he went on to be trustee at a board of directors for Florida A&M.
Yes, sir. Yeah. You did some research.
I remember our conversations. You know what I mean? Right. I remember our conversations, and that stood out to me. All right, so one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was what people are, you know, what's trending on the streets is the big news about the marijuana shops getting initial approval from the city of Muskegon Heights. 10. We heard people say that is 10 too many? How did y'all come with that number for a city this size? Or are these going to be smaller shops? They're not going to be traditional marijuana shops.
Well, I'm not sure how they were calculating the 10. In terms of retail establishments, there were 6 that were granted retail licenses. And those 6 are various areas across the city. Now, that number of 6 originally started out as 3 recreational retail establishments. That was the number of license capped at 3. However, if you go back, you remember, you may remember when we did medical marijuana licensing, we licensed 6 medical marijuana dispensaries. And so the medical dispensary is is commensurate with the recreational or adult use retail establishment. So the majority of our medical dispensaries also want to be able to do recreational. So when we got our applications in for the 3 spots that council had had determined, we found that the applications were extremely strong, and that it made sense based on the applications that we had to expand the number of recreational from 3 to 6.
Okay. All right. Another question is
If you don't mind, I forgot to mention, we have 5 micro licenses, and the micro business is that business that was really designed for the little guy to get in. It has a cap of 150 plants, and it allows you to grow, process, and retail in one location. So although the retail is not the only thing, it does have a retail component that goes along with the grow and the process.
Okay. The other question is that how many are black owned?
Well, I'm happy to report that of the 5 of the retail applicant, I'm sorry, micro business applicants, we awarded 4. There's one that's still on the bubble, but of the 4 micro businesses, they are all locally, 100% locally owned, and the owners of those establishments are African American. And in terms of the retail, of the 6 retail licenses, 5 of them had at least 40% African-American and local ownership. One was actually as high as 96% African-American ownership, local ownership.
Who helped you put this plan together? Because that seems to be very progressive.
Yes, and I have to give thanks to the leadership of the mayor and the council and their vision and their foresight. When I came in, there was a desire expressed to me by council and the mayor that they wanted to make sure as we move forward and made adjustments to the existing ordinance that we designed it in such a way that we would encourage and incentivize local ownership. Okay. We wanted to make sure that people that were reflective of the community in multiple ways had an opportunity to participate in this process. So with those goals in mind, I was able to sit down with a policy firm, African-American owned policy firm called Banks and Company. And they were instrumental in helping me capture the ideas that I had in a policy that was commensurate with the ordinances, the state statute. And so I have to give thanks to Banks and Company for helping me pull that together. And then, you know, as a city manager, you realize the value of having competing perspectives. And so after we put together the ordinance with Banks and Company, council allowed me to bring in a second consultant, which was Christ Enderly. I always pronounce the name of that firm wrong, but the attorney from that firm was Jocelyn Monahan, who had extensive experience in the marijuana statute on the state level, participated in the original conversations around the statutes, very well versed in it. And so I was able to bring her to the table and have her take a look at what we had put together, critique it, tweak it, and optimize the ordinance before it was passed by council.
Wow. Because when you got there, were there anything in place? Because they've been working on this thing before you got there.
Yes, sir. There was a medical marijuana ordinance in place. And you know, this is a new game for everybody, relatively speaking. And so the ordinance that was in place when I got here addressed only the medical licensing part. There were some aspects of it that could be improved. And so having an opportunity to create a ordinance for the recreational licensing gave me an opportunity to go back and fix some of the things that could be improved upon in the medical ordinance. And what we essentially did once council agreed to opt into the recreational, we combined the two ordinances together. So we have one consistent ordinance for medical licensing and recreational or adult use licensing.
Wow. Rob, coming to you next on Willie Henry down in DJ Willie Henry, Willie C down in Orlando, Florida said, that's great. The world is seeing what Muskegon Heights is doing. Black people are getting these right. licenses, man. That's good, man. So you had to go to Detroit, get this thing done then.
Well, you know, I would say that the ordinance that we have is probably one of the best that you will find in the country, second to the ordinance that Detroit has, in terms of guaranteeing local participation and giving an opportunity for people of color to come to the table and participate in this process. And we realized historically, and this was captured in what the state did, that there has been a disproportionate impact to minority communities, communities of color, and poor communities in terms of the way the marijuana infractions have been enforced and the impact of those infractions.
Wow. Jennifer Ross says, good job. Big Rob, go ahead, sir.
I know some people may be concerned about the security of these places. Mm-hmm. When you did these ordinances, did you all think about that also?
Absolutely. And I will commend the state because the state put a lot of thought into this. You know, that in order for them, they understood as they drafted the state or the state statute that in order for it to be approved, they had to address the concerns that communities across the state would have about security. And so the requirements that the state has in place with regard to safety and security are quite extensive. So we followed that template from the state, and we added some additional aspects that we felt would be appropriate for our community to guarantee that there would be safe and secure environments for these businesses to prosper.
All right, Big Rob, can you take this online question, please?
Yes, sir. Treasurer Crenshaw would like to know, do you think these shops will provide jobs?
Good question.
Great. And so a unique aspect of our ordinance is something that we call MIVDA, which is the Marijuana Industry Voluntary Economic Development Agreement. And I'm happy to say of the 18 licenses that we awarded overall, every single licensee agreed voluntarily to participate in MIVDA. And the MIVDA policy has specific goals set aside for local hire, for a minimum number of positions hired, and to work with those that are typically disenfranchised from the hiring process. So you will see from those licensees that a minimum of 10 new jobs per licensee, and some of them actually proposed upwards to 30 new jobs associated with their business venture. So that's going to be a huge uplift to the community to bring those jobs into the community, which was part of the argument for expanding the licenses from 3 to 6. You know, we've got 3 applicants that provided strong applications, and they bring with them economic development, jobs, increased tax revenue. And we're talking about renovating existing vacant buildings. And so council felt that denying the opportunity for those additional 3 to participate in the renewal of our community just didn't make sense when you look at the numbers.
Wow. I know when you guys, when they were first talking about it, mm-hmm. one of the concerns was the manufacturing portion of it. Right. Did you guys approve any manufacturers to take some of those old factories that are in Muskegon Heights and rehab those?
So we work to try to incentivize those factories as potential locations. unfortunately, the applicants that applied did not elect to use any of those old vacant factories as their locations. But the majority, I think with the exception of one of the licensees, is located in an existing vacant building. There is one licensee that is proposing to build from scratch on vacant land, which is also a plus because we want to, you know, bring that vacant land into the tax roll and improve those properties as well. But as it stands now, none of the existing factories are target locations for any of the grow or process operations. But that's something that may change as we go down the road, because those opportunities present themselves.
If you're watching this video, make sure you post this, your questions, share this segment with your platform. Go ahead, Big Rob, and we got a couple online questions.
How much in tax dollar revenue do you think this will bring to Muskegon Heights, and what could it do for Muskegon Heights, those tax dollars?
Good question. I was going to ask that. Good one.
Sure. So we don't have a specific projection because it all depends on the volume of business that is done. But by having 17 licensees, we know that we will get a significant share of the state revenue share, which is based on the 10% excise tax that they charge on retail. That goes into a pot, and they allocate that once the state reaches the $20 million threshold. Everything over the $20 million is then distributed evenly based on the number of licensees that you have. So we expect that that's going to be significant revenue. But specifically taxes, income tax, you know, we're one of the few cities in Michigan that has an income tax. So along with all those jobs that we talked about, we will get, if they're local, which you see a significant portion of the ownership is local, we get 1% income tax off of local incomes. And if they are folks that commute in to work, we get 0.5% off of that. And then property taxes. So right now, these properties that are vacant are bringing in very little tax revenue from property tax. So once they do the improvements, and the projected improvements is on average $3 million per property, we should see a significant bump in our property tax revenue. That won't be in this year because those taxes are assessed based on value changes this year, next year. But next year, we should see significant property tax revenue. And then the actual improvements that they do in the building, real property that they have located at the building, is also taxable. So we look for increased tax in those areas. Pie in the sky, I'd like to see, you know, $500,000 of tax overall additional revenues to the city. And then on top of that, the MyVita includes a minimum of $20,000 of contribution to city projects and concepts. And the majority of our licensees have indicated that they will work to far exceed that $20,000 threshold.
Okay, we got a bunch of questions. We got a bunch of questions online. We got a few more minutes. I'm gonna try to get to those questions. Jennifer Ross says, any community outreach involved in these new companies?
Yes. So part of the ordinance calls for a good neighbor policy, and that good neighbor policy says that these companies will reach out to the community. Ask them to do a forum with the community to get input. It asks for them not only to improve their facilities, but also to improve the area around their facilities. So you should see some improvements in either side of the properties that we're talking about. But the good neighbor policy specifically asks them and requires them to do outreach. And in order for them to meet their goals for local hires, they're going to have to work with the community.
All right, Treasurer Crenshaw says, is there a target audience for these shops? Are they all medical, or are they split between medical and recreation?
So when we're talking about this particular license application period, the licenses that we awarded are recreational licenses for adult use only. That's in addition to the medical licenses that were awarded back in April of last year. What you will probably find, the way the market is looking, you will probably find that a number of the medical licenses will consolidate with recreational licenses, and either do both or drop the medical because the market is larger for recreational. Medical, you'll have to have an ID card that is, you have to go through the process with a physician to authorize that, whereas the recreational is open to anyone 21 years or older.
Rob, can you take this next one, brother?
Yes. Ursula Harris says, have you created a social equity plan? And if so, did you consider it prior to the application process?
So there is a social equity aspect to the MyVita, and I would suggest that you, if you have a moment to go out there and look at the MyVita plan, and it talks about developing a fund out of the contributions that come from these companies to assist the development of local and minority business. We would love to see, and I know that there was an interest in one of the applicants in putting together a training program to help those people who are wanting to get into the industry. And I think that's an excellent idea, and I'm hoping that there will be funds available from the Social Equity Fund to be able to assist with getting that concept up and running.
I think Max McGuffey's question is pretty similar. Does the city of Muskegon Heights have its own social equity plan or comparable program? The city of Muskegon has one. It's called MSEP. I think you just addressed it. Thank you for that question, Max. Treasure Crenshaw, also, do you have it to be a certain age to work in these shops?
That's a very good question. Off the top of my head, I can't cite what the age requirement is. I believe if I had to take a stab at it, don't quote me on this, it's a minimum of 18 years of age. But I would have to go back and check that and get back to you on that.
Ursula Harris, why is the application process so sophisticated and difficult for locals with little or no funding to assist with the application process?
Well, I don't know that I would agree that it's difficult. It is sophisticated, but if you look at the results that we were able to achieve, you know, we had four out of five micro businesses that were awarded to local people of color, and they were successful in getting the application together and submitting it on time. One of the things that was included in the ordinance that we modified it included was a deficiency process. So if you turned your application in before the deadline, it required us to go through and identify anything that was missing or deficient and provide you with 5 days to cure, as it's called, cure the deficiencies, to fix it. So that process is an iterative process that allowed for, you know, the little guy who may not have had all the resources to get their application in and then work through making sure that they had the proper documents in place and that they addressed all of the questions. But I will say in general, we want to make sure that the folks that come in, that we give essentially the keys to the city, for lack of a better expression, to operate in this arena, have the ability to complete an application and complete it correctly, which is a good indicator in most cases that they will be able to do the work necessary to be a reputable member of the business community in Muskegon Heights.
Allison Hamill, Seventh Ma, says the minimum age for employment is 21. Thank you. Allison. I'm going down the line. I got quite a few questions coming in, man.
All right, let's keep it rolling.
All right, Ursula Harris, when is the next application process? How many licenses will you be awarding?
So the way the ordinance is written, there's a cap on the licenses, and we've reached the cap on retail. There is one license that slot available in the micro business, which was capped at 5. The applicant, there was one applicant that we that was on the bubble because their score was not high enough to automatically be considered. And I expect that in short order that they will do what they need to do in order to be successful in getting a conditional award. Now, if you look at the 17 licenses that we gave out, if those folks are not able to open within the timeline, then those slots will become available. So we have to wait the 6 months that they have in order to get their businesses up and running to see if there are any slots that become available.
Rob, can you take this one? That's a good one. Good question right here.
Jennifer Ross asks, I saw something about a consumption shop as well. Any additional information on that?
A Get High Pub.
So it's interesting though, because the state included the concept of consumption as a license with the idea that was a concept that would take off. But if you look at the numbers across the state, there aren't very many people who applied for it. They're having trouble figuring out the business model to be able to make that work. But the idea is that you can, if you have a consumption lounge with a consumption license, you can consume it on the premises, such as like a hookah lounge, or if you had edibles. The problem is that the way the statute's written, you can't serve anything. You cannot sell anything on those premises. So no water, no food, and definitely no alcohol. Okay. So how to make that business model work, you know, be able to pay your rent and the fees and the licensing and considerable utilities associated with making sure that there's no aroma or odors.
You know, how do they do it in Las Vegas? Because see, I heard that Mike Tyson has this big old ranch where he got his own brand. They sell it. They smoke it. They turn up. I haven't seen it.
Hey, I'd be afraid that that might get eat up by the tiger. Or probably come not out with a tattoo on the side of my face.
Right. All right. Jay Driver down in Houston, Texas. Hello, good brother. I think you mentioned this. What's the projected tax revenue that you anticipate receiving?
I'm hoping that we will hit the $500,000 mark at some point. And I think that will be a huge lift if you consider that our total budget is $7 million. So, you know, right there, we're talking about if we can hit that $500,000 mark, you know, that would be a significant portion of increasing our budget.
Right. Is it against the law? This is coming from Treasurer Crenshaw. Why you can't sell recreational and medical? Ganja? I guess that's how you say it, Rob.
Yeah, ganja.
At the same time, Jamaica, they got so many lanes. Loud gas. What happened? Just weed. You know what I mean? What happened to that?
Right. Hey, we are creative people. Definitely. Right. So you can sell medical and recreational at the same time. There are specific things that you have to do in order to be able to do that. You have to have it separated. It can't be in the same place. So essentially you have to have a division where it's on one side medical and on the other side is recreational. And of course the requirements to be able to purchase are different. You know, licensing, you have to be of age on the recreational side and you have to have a medical card on the medical side. So there are proposals that we have taken for folks who want to be able to do both in the same location, but there are specific requirements.
All right, a couple more questions. Ursula Harris, what is the denial process? If an application is received, do you send out a formal denial or do you just say, hey, forget it, I ain't going to respond to you. The application was whack. Now I ain't going to reply.
Well, for everybody that submitted their application on time and that met the deadline, they did get a specific communication. But for those applications that did not make the deadline, there was not a requirement in the ordinance for a response.
Okay. So I'm assuming that Renata McCunningham is speaking on the consumption license. Are there any license open for that? I know you mentioned it.
Yeah. Yes. There is not a cap on the consumption licenses. However, there is a requirement that if you want to have a consumption license in the central business district, that it has to be partnered with a retail license. So if you have to have a license to do retail in order to do consumption, if you want to be in the central business district. And the idea behind that is that if you have a retail license, you can sell in your retail facility and they can go next door or to a separated area and consume it in that area, which is the consumption part. they cannot transport it from one side to the other. So an employee of the business would, which is commonly referred to as bud tenders, would be the individuals, once you buy it, that will bring it to you in the consumption area.
All right, Jennifer Ross, you hear that? Bud tenders. All right, okay. Yeah. Hey, it's a bunch of buildings in the Heights, so you know that's something I'm gonna have to look at, man. They got a bunch of vacant buildings for the big warehouse. You can have music though, right?
Yes, you can. Yes,
you got music.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Rob.
Can you charge to get into the consumption area?
Yes, there's nothing that says that you cannot charge to enter the consumption area. Some of the ideas are to have, you know, a club that you become a member of, and you pay monthly dues in order to be a member of that club, and that gives you entrance to the facility to be able to consume at that facility. So that's one of the ideas. That's not the only way that you could do it. You could do a cover charge. There's a number of different ways that you could address it.
All right, family, get that bag. Our last question, last comment coming from Real Robinson. No question, just a comment. Kudos to Troy and the council for doing an excellent and thorough job on this and thus ensuring that outsiders won't come in, milk our community, and take that money back to their community. The city will definitely benefit, definitely on point with that. Thank you.
A great point with that, because if we look at the way the diamond trade worked, you know, this is a natural resource. This is something that we need to protect, and we want to make sure that people aren't going to come in and mine our natural resources and take it someplace else. So I'm really excited about being able to ensure that a significant portion of our community was able to participate in this process.
Where are we at on these new housing projects?
What's that?
The new housing projects.
Mm-hmm. What about them?
Yeah. Is it coming? Are they happening? Or?
Yeah. I mean, we've got lots that we're selling. There's lots that we have sold. We had one developer that was at the table, but because of the delays, they have taken a pause on it. So I'm hoping to bring them back to the table to build new construction from scratch on these vacant lots. So
hey, when we get
to the spring, I think we'll see some holes being dug and some dirt being broken.
How many you project to see by spring?
Well, I think we'll probably see out of the gate, based on what I'm hearing, 3 or 4 to start. And I think if we can get this program that is being discussed with the Community Foundation to help finance some of the local builders, I think that'll accelerate the process. We want to be able to bring in an opportunity for local folks to work on these projects, building projects, and also to be able to learn skills. So there's the earn and learn concept that Phyllis Laudermill has patented, trademarked. And so I think that's one of the aspects that we want to try to incorporate into new construction.
All right. Tracy, thank you for your question. Do you want to answer this, or how do dispensary pay their taxes without being able to utilize banks? Is that a stipulation?
Well, because it's still, you know, banks are federal, and because it is still not legalized on the federal level, that is a very touchy-feely process.
Wow. And so
there are, in the industry, that they have figured out a way to meet the requirements of paying taxes through the state and doing it without violating any of the federal laws. That particular aspect of it is not an area of my expertise, so I can connect you with one of the establishments or the attorney that is consulting with us on marijuana, and she can give you some more details on that.
That's ridiculous. That's straight up crazy, man. Wow. Well, hopefully things have changed now. All right, we'll see. Thank you so much, Troy. And we appreciate you, man. And folks, he got a radio show here.
Do I get a shout out?
Yeah. Shout out to radio show, man.
Yeah, so on Wednesdays at 2:00, we've just started a new show called Reaching the New Heights. So, and I'm excited about the opportunity this conference to know the folks. A little, give them an opportunity to know me a little bit better, and talk about the great plans that the mayor and the council have laid out, some of the things that we've been able to accomplish, things that are on the board to be accomplished, and also to understand and learn more about how government works and how we can make sure it works for our community.
All right, good brother. Peace and blessings to you.
You too, and thank you for the opportunity. What you're doing is amazing, PA. This is awesome. 103.
All praise to God, man. Take care.
Amen. Thank you. Amen.
All right. Yeah.